Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome back. You are listening to NPR News. I'm Ewan Kerr. We're going to fill out the rest of this hour with a discussion of the Cohen hearing. There was a lot of breathless talk on radio and TV about it being a historic moment, but was it really? Let's actually listen to a couple of those moments. First, from Michael Cohen himself.
I am ashamed of my weakness and my misplaced loyalty, of the things I did for Mr. Trump in an effort to protect and promote him. I am ashamed that I chose to take part in concealing Mr. Trump's illicit acts rather than listening to my own conscience. I am ashamed because I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist, he is a con man, and he is a cheat.
I have a feeling we're going to be hearing that soundbite many times. But while Cohen generally received a warm reception from Democrats on the panel, Republicans, including Clay Higgins from Louisiana, were far from welcoming.
I've arrested several thousand men, and you remind me of many of them, the ones that immediately become humble and remorseful at the time they're actually booked. And while they're incarcerated, they're quite penitent, and then return to their former selves when they're back on the street. So, respectful to your family and what they're going through, I owe you the honesty to tell you that that's my sense of you, good sir.
But what new did we learn from the Cohen hearing? What caught your ear? Did the political playing field just change, or will this all be forgotten in a few months? We want to hear if the hearing changed your mind. Give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. That's 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Ewan Kerr. That's at EUANKERR. Again, at EUANKERR. Joining me this morning to discuss this is constitutional historian Jeffrey Engel. He's director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. Good morning.
Hi, good morning to you.
And we also have Philip Bump, national correspondent for The Washington Post, who has been very, very busy writing the last couple of days. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So maybe let's start, maybe I could start with you, Philip. Well, let's just clarify what the hearing was actually about. This was not part of the Mueller inquiry, which was about collusion with Russia, although that did come up. I mean, what was the aim here, Philip?
Essentially, this was following the midterm elections in which the Democrats retook control of the House. This was the House Oversight Committee under new leadership essentially relaunching a look at various questions about President Trump, his campaign, and his private business. So this was, one can think of it as sort of the first hearing in what is likely to be a series looking more closely at Trump himself, something that Republicans, when they led the committee up until January, were much more reticent to do.
So, Jeffrey Engel, from a historical point of view, do you see it differently? I mean, how do you see this fitting into the larger context of history?
You know, I think it's going to be a moment which people look back to when they try to understand what happened with whatever does happen with Donald Trump. I mean, we have the famous, you made a great point that we're going to be hearing that quote again and again, as we do from different quotes from Watergate and the Clinton hearings, presuming things go that far. I mean, I think it's important to recognize that one of the things that did not come up in discussion yesterday was whether or not any of the crimes necessarily that were discussed should fall into the category of a high crime. It's remarkable to me how the Congress and the American public, to be honest, fundamentally does not understand what a high crime and misdemeanor is, at least as outlined in the Constitution. A high crime is a crime against the state, against the people, and it doesn't necessarily have to be an actual crime to be a high crime. By the same token, the president could commit any number of crimes. My favorite example is jaywalking, and that not be a high crime. And the fixation that we had in the hearings yesterday, though I understand why, on whether or not illegalities were conducted really is only part of the conversation, which I think we need to have more of, which is whether or not if those illegalities did occur, those would be high crimes.
So let's talk a little about what we actually learned, what was new, because it's so confusing. So much stuff has been swirling around for so many months. But Philip Bump, I mean, what caught your ear as something that was new and significant that Michael Cohen said yesterday?
I think there were a couple of things. I think on the setting aside the question of what President Trump has done well in office, there was the revelation that Cohen essentially accused President Trump and the Trump Organization of using inflated economic data to seek bank loans or insurance coverage, which, you know, could rise to the level of fraud in both cases, bank fraud or insurance fraud. That, I think, is significant. That, I think, is going to be something that the Democrats pursue. He also made two claims that could be potentially very, very damaging for President Trump, although the claims that he made were pretty loosely formulated. And those were that he said that President Trump had a phone call with Roger Stone in July of 2016, at which point Stone said that he knew some upcoming information from WikiLeaks was going to be released. And then he also said that he was in a meeting in June of 2016 when Donald Trump Jr. came in and whispered to Trump that a meeting had been set up, which he took to mean after the fact that Donald Trump Jr. was referring to this infamous meeting at Trump Tower on June 9th, 2016. And the reason those two things in particular are important is because we have reporting from CNN from last November that when Robert Mueller submitted questions to be answered by President Trump, among the questions were, did you talk to Roger Stone about WikiLeaks and did you know in advance about the Trump Tower meeting? And CNN reports that Donald Trump said no to both of those things. If Cohen's testimony is accurate, if those things happened, and if CNN's reporting is accurate, that suggests that Donald Trump said things to Mueller that aren't true, and that is, to the point that was just made, something that opens up a whole can of worms.
So this hearing could go, I mean, what comes out of this hearing could go in so many different ways. I mean, what's your sense? Are we likely to see more investigations, Philip Bump, of what we've just heard?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say unequivocally we're going to see that for two reasons. The first is that we have 2020 looming. President Trump is, you know, almost certainly going to be the Republican nominee for the president in 2020, and Democrats, in the same way that the Benghazi hearing stretched out, you know, from 2013 to 2016 with Hillary Clinton on the ticket, it's very likely Democrats will continue to put pressure on Trump as the election looms. But secondarily, and more fundamentally, I think that Democrats sincerely feel as though there are things to be investigated, that for 2 years when Republicans ran these committees, that they used kid gloves in considering what Donald Trump had done both as president and during his campaign. And I think Democrats feel as though they need to make up for lost time in taking a look at some of these things.
We have a lot of people on the line already. Clearly, we have touched a nerve. We have Amy, who is in Brooklyn Center. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Was your mind changed by the hearings?
No. What they said reinforced what I already believed. I feel like he's telling the truth. And what struck me was that, number one, the Republicans didn't question him anything about Trump. And number two, they spent the whole time trying to discredit Cohen. And when you think about it, would, you know, criminals hang out with criminals? Would Trump have a squeaky, clean, honest lawyer? No. He wouldn't want to work for Trump, and he wouldn't want to, you know, he wouldn't work out for Trump because Trump wanted somebody to lie and cover up and cheat.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in today. We also have Laurie from Minnetonka. Good morning, Laurie. You listened to the hearing too?
I did not listen to all of it. I would just like to say I'm a lifelong Republican. I did not vote for Donald Trump, don't particularly care for him, but have always said I would vote for him rather than voting for Bernie Sanders if that choice were to be the one I'd have to make. And yesterday I've changed my mind, and I would now vote for Bernie Sanders over Donald Trump. That's how disgusted I was. And it, you know, makes me sad, frankly.
Great. Well, thank you very much for calling in. Jeffrey Engel, in terms, I mean, it seems that, well, I heard one commentator saying yesterday that there was basically nothing good came out of that hearing yesterday. Such was the acrimony. Do you think from a historical point of view, that's what people will remember?
You know, I think the really important point was actually made by your first caller in her very first sentence in response to your question, that it what she saw confirmed what she already believed. And we are living, obviously, and I'm not the first person to say this, in such a siloed news media environment that people's predispositions are going to affect entirely the new information that comes in. And I think the real fascinating question of the investigations going forward is going to be, is there anything that could be revealed, any piece of evidence, any new piece of data, any new revelation that could possibly make people who are supporters of the president, diehard supporters of the president, change their mind? You know, at the end of the day, any further discussion that we have politically is going to only be acrimonious, as you put it quite well, until we find some broad understanding that either innocence or guilt or lack of malfeasance or just plain skullduggery occurred. You know, this is an important lesson from Richard Nixon's pre-impeachment. I like to think of him as being half impeached because, of course, he was about to be before he resigned, that Republicans really largely supported the president up until the moment that they didn't. That is to say, up until the moment that new evidence occurred, new evidence came out, the smoking gun tape most famously, that allowed people who had been his supporters to genuinely open their eyes, if you will, or reassess. And the support that he had within the Republican Senate in particular just absolutely evaporated overnight. So it really is a question what in 2019 could in theory even do a similar thing, given how we are hearing and listening to different news all the time in this country.
We have Jeffrey Engel. He is the director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. Also on the line, we have Philip Bump, who is national correspondent for The Washington Post. On Twitter, we got a comment from Juan saying that the Cohen hearing was a complete waste of time. He lied to them once and is going to jail for it. He was looking for a good book deal when he gets out of jail. Philip Bump, Michael Cohen testified voluntarily yesterday. I mean, why did he do that? What does he stand to gain?
Well, I would say there are probably a couple of reasons that he testified. I would say that one reason is that clearly he has some animus towards President Trump, and he wanted to, you know, there were certain parts of his testimony, for example, his noting that Donald Trump had avoided service in Vietnam by claiming that he had bone spurs on his heels. The only reason he included that was because Trump was in Vietnam and he wanted to embarrass Trump. So that was certainly part of it. But I think it's probably also the case that part of his motivation was that he did want to come clean, that he had this sort of come-to-God moment in, you know, after having admitted to all these various crimes. The fact that he admitted to the crimes, the fact that he admitted the lying to Congress, you know, does suggest someone who, while, yes, absolutely trying to reduce his prison sentence, you know, also had potentially had some sort of change of heart. Now, it's important to note that the two of the arguments that have been made about why he was inherently biased in his testimony yesterday are the one we just heard about the book deal and also that he was trying to reduce his sentence. There was nothing in his, you know, there is a way for his sentence to be reduced called a Rule 35 reduction. That requires helping to convict other people of crimes, which isn't what he was there to do yesterday. And as for a book deal, he could have gotten a book deal yesterday for $200,000, you know, for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Everyone wants to hear what he has to say. The idea that he only did yesterday because of a book deal is, I think, pretty ridiculous. But why he was sitting there and doing that, I think that was a combination of both his frustration with Trump that had probably been building over time, but then secondarily recognizing that this was information that, assuming it's true, which I think is, you know, a fair assumption in a lot of cases, was information the public should have.
No, I've heard that some people say that the book industry has been completely revived by the Trump administration. I think there may be some truth to that. I mean, Jeffrey Engel, I mean, what's your take on why he did this? I mean, is this simply a matter of redemption?
That was the sense which I got, and the point which he made repeatedly was that, in a sense, he has nothing to gain legally from testifying because he's already going to jail. So at this point, you know, why not tell the truth, especially since anything he says at this point that is not true could further complicate his legal life. So I found that to be quite compelling in a dramatic sense.
We are talking about reactions to the Cohen testimony yesterday in the open session. Of course, that is continuing today in closed session as he talks about intelligence matters. We would love to hear your thoughts. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at EuanKerr. That's at EuanKerr. Turning back to the phones, a lot of people on the line. We have Mark in Bemidji. Good morning, Mark. What is your thought?
Good morning, Ewan. Yes, thank you. Well, I watched or listened to it on NPR.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And what I came away with is what the Bard said so long ago. It was a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. It didn't do any, nothing new was said. It was a few things were implied. And the fact that he consulted with the judiciary heads of the committee beforehand told me something was okay. This is an ad hominem attack. And I don't know if it's going to reduce his sentence at all. I don't think that's it. I think he was just, you know, how can we do damage? Mm-hmm. So. I don't think it's going to amount to anything.
I'm curious how you feel, though, because it seems that this is how politics is done nowadays, just a lot of sound and fury.
Yes, and what is it going to signify? What has been known newly? What new information did we glean from this? And there's a few things that, well, there might be this, might be that. And I think, well, is this the way politics are done, but do we have to keep doing them this way? I mean, so that means the next time the Republicans get control of the House, there's going to be other committee hearings on other people doing the same thing. I hope not. I really hope not.
Can I jump in on that point?
Please do, yes.
I think it's a really, really astute point that this is how politics are done, and also that there was, by and large, no earth-shattering revelations yesterday. But that in itself, I think, proves something historically fascinating. In previous cases where presidents were under scrutiny and their own party came to their defense, typically the party came to their defense vigorously, both in terms of their character and critically in terms of denying the accusations against the president, whether it was Iran-Contra, whether it was the first months of Bill Clinton's travails, even when it was Richard Nixon. When a president is attacked, usually the people who are defending him not only try to defend him as a person, but try to say none of this actually happened, or it didn't happen the way you're describing. There was remarkably little discussion yesterday from Republican inquisitors about whether or not these events actually happen, whether there was a payment, whether there was even a tryst between President Trump and this paramour. I think it's really remarkable that those ideas that the president either could do this, would do this, or had done this are essentially already baked into the equation in a way that I've never seen in presidential history. I mean, just a mere whiff of Barack Obama or Bill Clinton, well, maybe not Clinton, he has his own issues, or either Bush having had this type of relationship with an adult film star would have doomed their presidency on the first day. And the fact that this is just basically not questioned as a matter of this discussion is really quite fascinating.
We have Derek on the line from Yeager City, Wisconsin. Good morning, Derek. What are your thoughts?
Hi. I just wanted to give maybe a non-left or non-right point of view.
Go for it. Yeah.
I listen to NPR every day, and it's always from either the left or right point of view. But to me, I listened to the hearings yesterday on NPR, and it's if you don't have any sort of recordings or video evidence or documents or witnesses with affidavits, then what is the point of this judicial hearing? You know, what are they going to gain from it other than make the president look bad today for this, you know?
Can I?
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Sorry, I'm losing who's talking here.
It's Philip from the Post. I just want to make a quick point, which is that, you know, I mean, the point of this, and I think this is a point that reinforces or is a response to both of the last two callers, is that this is the beginning of an investigation, right? This is the point here. The House Oversight Committee is looking into various things, and one of the things they're doing is they're taking evidence, taking testimony from a person to flesh out an investigation into something, right? And so we have seen over the course of the past 6 years or so, we have seen a lot of investigations that are similar, where you hold hearings, you have people come in, they talk, and eventually what happens is you produce a report. Sometimes they take testimony from people, and it doesn't end up in a report because they discover there isn't really much to learn. And so I think to look at Michael Cohen sort of as its own event and to determine what has been revealed that is, you know, to the equivalent of the smoking gun tape in the Nixon case, yes, there wasn't anything along those lines. But there was a lot of new information that was presented, which does open up whole new avenues for investigation. And so I think that we have this habit of expecting sort of blockbusters every day because we've seen so many times that that's happened over the course of the past 2 years. The Michael Cohen thing had its own little mini blockbusters. It had a lot of revelations. You know, yes, an affair with an adult film star, but imagine any other former president's attorney stepping forward and calling them a racist under oath. That, too, would have been, you know, something remarkable in the past. But it's important to remember that this is not, by itself, Michael Cohen's testimony was not intended to be a thing that was settled the score once and for all in either direction. It was, instead, moving forward and learning more about Trump and his organization.
Well, I wanted to ask Jeffrey Engel, just the fact that some of these things were said in open testimony in front of a congressional committee, even if there isn't an investigation, was that significant that this happened yesterday?
You know, it's not necessarily significant that the charges against the president were said. There have been things said in Congress even much worse than calling the president a liar or a con man or a racist. Things said not only by witnesses, but by actual members of Congress. What I think is fascinating is that nobody necessarily refuted the charge. There was very little discussion in the broad media about whether or not we need to investigate the question of whether or not Donald Trump is a racist, or more accurately, more specifically, is a person who is a liar. And, you know, I think it's been readily understood across the political spectrum, to your previous caller's point, whether you're left, right, or middle, there is a general understanding that the president's production of words that relate to the truth are not necessarily always accurate. For political reasons. And I think his supporters suggest that as well. So the fact that there was no counter to the accusations about his character as a historian struck out to me.
We have Alex on the line from New Richmond. Good morning, Alex. What are your thoughts?
Thanks for the call. I was frankly appalled at the concerted effort by the Republicans to tear down Cohen when there has to be substantial evidence in Cohen's possession and also in Special Counsel Mueller's possession for the Republicans to pretend that Cohen existed as a criminal within the Trump Organization without the Trump Organization benefiting from Cohen's actions is insane. And there are things since Trump has become president that are even more, you don't want to say criminal quite yet, but they are exceptionally strange. When he first had taken his oath of office and said, well, we're not going to honor the One China policy any longer. And a couple of days later, China approved 38 Trump trademarks for the Chinese markets, along with 20 plus for Ivanka Trump's own company in the Chinese market. At what point are the Republicans willing to acknowledge the strangeness of all of this self-aggrandizement? It's
It's simply too clear.
Thank you. Thank you for calling today. Let's turn to, we have so many people on the line. The Darren in Montevideo. Good morning.
Hi, this is actually Daryl.
Daryl, I'm sorry. Thank you very much for calling.
It's all right. It should be noted that Michael Cohen was convicted in part for repeating and reinforcing the same lies that Donald Trump has been burying all of us under for the past 2 years. The fact that his prior testimony echoed the president and the fact that the Republican Party acknowledges that that testimony was false should give them pause to wonder why they're supporting a president who cannot tell the truth. The fact that they have not made that connection is disturbing, and at best, and is terrifying at worst.
Thank you for calling today. There is the hearings continue today. I mean, where does this go from here, Philip Bump? Where will we hear anything, do you think, from this is the second session that's been held in closed session. Will we ever learn what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the grand scale of time, we'll learn. you know, it may take 30 years sometimes. But, you know, my suspicion is that we may get some dribs and drabs leaking out from those closed sessions, depending on what it is that he's spoken about. There have been occasions, you know, we've had a lot of times when people have gone and presented closed testimony. There have been a few times in which that testimony has been later made public for various reasons, including testimony of Donald Trump Jr. and Glenn Simpson, who runs that firm Fusion GPS, which is involved in all this. So we may hear more about this. You know, I think that probably we have heard, and you know, I should get out of the prediction making business. I think that probably much of what Cohen said yesterday is the sort of thing that he's going to be talking about in those closed sessions as well. I'm not sure how privy he is to particularly classified information, simply because he never worked in the administration. So, you know, we may have gotten most of what we're going to get out of Michael Cohen.
We just have a couple of minutes left, but Jeffrey, I'm curious, looking at things as you do as a historian from the long view, are we going to be hearing about this hearing for years and years and years to come? Or given the way that our news cycle is on hyperdrive at the moment, is this something that's going to quickly fade into history?
You know, I don't know if we're going to be hearing about this hearing, but I think that the topics discussed are likely to be the first sentence of any future history about the Trump administration. But I want to go back, actually, as you said, to the long term. In fact, if we go back really to the start of the country when the founders wrote the words high crimes and misdemeanors, they also had in their mind an idea of what a president not so much shouldn't be, but should be. George Washington was their example, a person who was willing to, most importantly, show genuine virtue, which they understood as a person who was willing to put their own needs behind those of the country, that was willing to sacrifice and suffer if it was for the better good of the country. And so I'm struck by one of the denials that the president made about his business dealings with Russia, that he said, you know, why wouldn't I have had business dealings? Well, because I could have lost money if I won the election. You know, so the fact that he said that he was more interested in himself necessarily than the national good is something that George Washington and those around him would have found absolutely appalling. Whether they had evidence or not, they would just find his words appalling enough.
Jeffrey Engel, we have to wrap up. Thank you very much. Jeffrey Engel is director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. Philip Bump, thank you too. National correspondent for The Washington Post. You're listening to NPR News.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.